from inside. The one on the left is called Pillars of Assumptions. I would like to read to you what that work is about because it has a lot to do with my concerns. Pillars of Assumptions is about truths, reality, and misconceptions. As the last important act before they die, the elders of a town are called upon to recount its history, which is then inscribed onto an impressive monument in the center of the town square. As each relates the events differently, the medley of confusion is carved into the stone to remain there forever. The elders believe they are passing down the truth, but the sum of their accounts does not bring us closer to any truth, only further from it. The seriousness of the ritual, the recounting and the carving into stone, coupled with the inaccuracies of the stories, create a chaotic, multifaceted mirror of our society. We all perpetuate our misconceptions. We are all perpetrators in our own and collective destiny. We are ready to believe, follow, or worship anything as long as it has some degree of official approval. The tall, slim obelisk that looks like the Washington Monument proudly displays the inscriptions. It represents our value systems and comments on what is elevated to monumental status in our culture. Who selects and decides how our history is written, how our daily lives are determined, and our illusions of freedom preserved and guarded. The elders look forward to the honor of writing history at the end of their lives, and they cherish the ritual, which is very democratic and offers freedom of expression to all. And in a sense, it is better than having just one official history that no one can refute. Everyone believes the history is real, and in a way it is. The events and hearsay form a crazy patchwork of overlapping phenomena, somewhat like our reality, which can be interpreted from many angles and perspectives. Meanwhile, the tradition is carried along, the chaos is fostered, contradictions are preserved and handed down to new generations. We seem as unbound to our misconceptions as we are bound to this earth, and can never see things as they really are or measure our destiny because we interfere with what we experience. We observe multitudes of minute and conflicting truths from which we piece together our reality and reason, much like insects whose compound vision is pieced together from a multitude of simple eyes that supply their aberrated view. Perhaps this is why we have difficulty understanding the universe and our role in it, and admitting that all through life, even at the end, the truth is elusive. The elders all speak the truth. There is no deception intended. That is just the way things are. The work on the right was designed for the Diomede Islands near the North Pole during the Cold War to connect the two islands, one which belongs to the USSR and the other one to the United States. I also, I will talk about that in a moment. These two stones that we now have in the exhibition that were brought in from Italy, I carved in Pietrasanta while I was teaching at the University of Genoa. I carved the major achievements of mankind in science into the two tablets. The piece refers to Genoa as Vendonia. It is now 6,000 AD, and these are 4,000-year-old excavations from 1986. We get a second chance at looking at our present beliefs and guidelines. This work is called Tree Mountain. where 10,000 people come together from around the world to plant 10,000 trees. The mountain is not to be touched for four centuries. And I was invited by Finland to plant the trees, to do this work in full scale in one of their sand pits. We have to first create the mountain, have to build the mountain, and then people will come. If you're interested, please get in touch with me. You can go to Finland to plant a tree, or you can rent a Finnish child for $25, I understand. And the child will plant a tree for you. The tree belongs to you and your family for the next 400 years. You can take the tree and auction it off like any work of art at Sotheby's or Christie's. It can change partnerships, but the tree cannot be touched. And this work functions on many levels. One, to understand that art can never really be owned. To understand the ecological ramifications of the troubles we have now with trees, and which we don't even understand, because reforestation is not the answer. New forests not only produce inferior lumber, but the technology that we are using hurting native forests. And companies like Georgia Pacific are exploiting our newly found environmentalism, and they're cutting down the trees as fast as they can in native virgin forests, which allows them to get subsidy to plant new forests, and the government provides them with land. And the faster they cut, the faster they get new land. Environmentalism is brand new. We have no laws against that. So it deals with that. This will be a new ecosystem, untouched for four centuries. People can visit. The people who own the tree can be buried under their tree, because we're going to have trouble with cemetery space in the future. And if they do not wish to be cremated, they can be buried under their tree to feed the mountain and to be part of it. And it functions on many other levels, such as cultural. It deals with transcendence, survival. We can't live as long as a tree can, which gives us some thoughts of how we should deal with our lives and what happens to our short lifespans and what we can do to transcend and to send messages to future generations. Noah's Ark, a spaceship, is a satire on our runaway technology. Everything in this ship is contradictory. The materials are old timber, fiberglass. The ship is equipped with the latest astronavigational gear, radar, sonar, computers. As you come on board, everything blinks, but nothing works. It can't fly. It's not seaworthy. It's just beautiful to look at. And the engine is a very intricate drawing on the wall. On the right is boundaries defined. A very simple structure that I think deals with complicated issues, borders, where one thing ends and another thing begins. I want it to be put at the edge of a city where civilization ends and a forest begins, or the civilization of the forest ends and the chaos of the city begins. On top of a hill at the edge of water, the borderline for humanity beyond which it cannot exist. The idea is that as you pass through it, you change. And what's important here is the thought to be conscious of borders, whether we eliminate them, overcome them, being conscious of them. And the change is what I'm trying to call attention to. This work deals with gravity. This is a sculpture that uses superconductive elements. The teardrop hovers over the center unaided. It sits on a cushion of air and moves with air currents, but always comes back to the center. I proposed this structure for University City Science Center for Philadelphia, where I was a finalist for a commission, and the architect was afraid to try a first and commissioned a flag instead. On the right, you see a mathematical concept put into a piece of sculpture, a see-through made up of steel cables. These are now drawings for North Waterfront Park, where I did the master plan for the conversion of a 97-acre garbage dump that sits in the San Francisco Bay, surrounded by water on three sides. And it's not just the conversion of a garbage dump into a park, but it's also creating a new ecosystem and creating something for an alienated community to give them a common ground, a common interest to work on. These are various forms, silhouetted forms, a brackish marsh, a lake that I designed, walkways. This one is called Gate to View the Golden Gate. As the sun sets, the sun would actually set within this gate and light it up. There's a duck pond, and these are sculptures for a tidal pool. The water comes in 7 to 11 feet and changes the shape of the sculpture in high tide. And at the openings, as the water rushes through, it creates a sound. So it becomes a singing fountain, and it's also a rest for birds. On the left, you see a spiraling tree mountain. And on the right, these are some sketches for amphitheaters. I designed forms that would define themselves through usage or else would be designed as geometric forms to be eroded with use. I also designed testing grounds. This is actually the first garbage dump that does test on itself, find out the result of of methane-eating microbes and their effect on the garbage, also to grind up the garbage to create compost, which has never been done before in a conversion. I designed two lighthouses. One is burning off methane because we are not embarrassed by having created the garbage. We might as well not use electricity, but burn off the methane through the lighthouse. And the other lighthouse takes in sunlight during the day and emits it at night. Here you see a pyramidal form in a pool. And since landfills have no history, the only place on Earth is a landfill that you can't say that something happened there before. So I wanted to put animals, the missing animals and missing culture into it. These would be carved into hillsides. And on the right, you see ghost ship for the ships that sunk in the bay, excuse me, that sunk in the bay. And also, I look at this park, this island, as a ship surrounded by water, and it represents our lives, our way of looking at things. Here again, history for a place without. Another place without history may be Los Angeles. This was designed for a shiny new plaza in Los Angeles, giving it the past through Eastern Island writings, Indian writings, and the future through mathematics. What you see in the center here is the Omega factor, deciding whether the universe will expand forever or contract and start all over. And these are bronze inlay and granite. This one is wheat field, a confrontation. I planted 2 acres of wheat downtown Manhattan, where Battery Park City is now, in 1982, to call attention to our misplaced priorities, to the necessity of thinking about the land, and many other reasons that I can't think of right now. I planted on that garbage that you see on the left, and harvested 1,000 pounds of healthy golden wheat. This is a recent work that just came down in Finland, in the Museum of Modern Art in Helsinki and Tampere. I put a 35-foot barge into the museum filled with earth. One side of the earth is frozen, the other side is warm, and there's a heartbeat coming out of the boat. And there are, well, you can't see that here. They're old chains and ropes and an anchor, each one representing something about our lives. It's a ship. This one is a sketch for a wildlife preserve, the first bio preserve in the nation. They're doing bio research and creating a frozen zoo of endangered species. These animal forms will be carved into hillsides and roads. On the right, you see a Stonehenge type construction. The stones are about 16 to 20 foot high, hand carved, and they're casting a shadow into a small lake. They represent the past. On the other side of the water, there is a high-tech sundial that will tell you precisely where you are, your longitude, latitude, line, the time of day. It represents technology. And I think that's it. Thank you. Do you have any questions? Mm-hmm. more of what happened, or?
Who is sacred to, and is it, who owns that land now?
The chains were on the trees only for a week. I did not want to hurt the trees. It was the children were beginning to sit on the chains, and the interesting thing that happened was that I pulled the chains very tight because it was also creation of work of art. It was the selection process of selecting the trees to be chained together, the portal, the chamber, and so on. And the trees moved with the chains as a person moves to make himself comfortable in a bed. And 3 days later, the chains were loose, and they looked like limbs. It's very interesting.
But I was also wondering about, you just said it was an Indian.
It had been an Indian burial ground that had been desecrated, and the artifacts had been stolen. And we were told that we should not go in there and we should not touch anything because something terrible will happen to us. Well, we were just supervised by the Indians. We were working under their watchful eyes and surrounded by the spiders. I can't really tell you anything more about that. Yes?
How high is your mountain going to be?
In Finland? We'll start. We're supposed to be starting in January, and we have to actually create the mountain.
How?
From refuse material that they cannot use for road building. These are gravel pits, very large gravel pits. And there is a law. It's going to be about 35 meters. It depends on how much material we get. It's very difficult to, it's costly to build a mountain. Moving them is easier. I think it's going to be 1,000 meters. An oval in shape. I have a model, a sort of a simplified model in the exhibition. Yes.
Do you want to talk about your involvement in environmental organizations? What do you do as an artist in those?
Well, I think I mentioned it briefly before that I believe we have to overcome the boundaries of art. Art is elitist by nature, and I think that world issues necessitate that the artist leaves his or her studio and ivory tower and comes out into the world, into the bureaucracy he, she hoped to escape, and offers this summing up that artists can do, this vision that artists have, which communicates directly. Politicians can't save us. Spiritual leaders can't save us. Scientists can't save us. But bringing these people together in a dialogue, one sector cannot deal with human problems anymore. They are too complex and too widespread, much more than we realize. And so we have these global conferences where spiritual leaders and leaders of countries come together with artists and scientists and the business sector to see how we can come together, come to an understanding, and solve this problem, because we can only do that by listening to each other. And I think artists could actually get a larger role with this vision. Art communicates. Art is a global communicator. When you listen to a song You understand it. You don't need any interpretation. It communicates immediately. Visual images, metaphors, are direct communications. And I feel that it is important for artists to lend themselves. Also to other areas where an artist being involved in business would be a different attitude than the businessman in profit, in production, in architecture or urban planning. It would be benign solutions found. Cities would be laid out differently with greater access, not creating elitist neighborhoods and separations. But the access all through the city to create healthy future cities, because we are having problems with our major cities, and we're going to have many more problems with them as cities grow. So I feel that artists should assume a larger role in these plannings, if they so wish. Yes?
Do you find any group understands your work more than another, like children or elderly or scientists or Norwegians? Or
I have no trouble with children at all. They never question anything. They just know right away. So I know that it's a kind of sophistication that we have to let go to understand things, because what I'm trying to do is to do away with the surface structure, the surface knowledge, and get down to the nucleus of things, peel away. And that's why I think children react to the work. No, I think each person comes to my work on a different level. It depends on a person's pre-knowledge, interest. They come in through many different doors. Yes?
Whose work has inspired you, or who do you look up to as an artist?
Well, let me put it this way. I admire many people. I admire many artists. I admire many philosophers, many scientists. I admire anyone who has knowledge and is willing to share it and is not building it on a personal ego. And naming one person would be difficult. It's not a philosopher I like, it's philosophy. It's not an artist, it's art. So it's very difficult to answer that with a name. Yes?
What sort of scientific concepts are you trying to express currently? Chaos theory or?
Not one concept. It's not one concept. It's trying to place science somewhere in our lives, because we have been relying on science for the past 400 years, and it's gotten us where we are. So science is not the answer. Expansion, exponential growth, obviously is not the answer. I think reevaluation and getting back to beginnings, not in a sense of reversing processes, but seeing where we have been and where we are going is what I'm trying to do. It's like the organism that developed memory so that it understands where it came from and where it's going. This kind of summing up is absolutely necessary at this point, and somebody's got to do it. Yes, any other questions? Yes, you can leave your name and address, possibly a phone number, with Jill Hartz at the museum, and she will collect these for me and send them to me at one point.
The no checks, yeah.
No. No. You have to wait until the project is to a point where you can come there or rent a child. But it's in a very beautiful area, and you may want to visit. Yes, anyone else? Thank you.